This is Jim Eagster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And as we begin our show today, we will cover a few topics, but it is important to note the passing of the 26 people who were killed Friday in Newtown, Connecticut. The gunman in the shooting was carrying an arsenal of hundreds of rounds of deadly ammunition, enough to kill about every student in the school if given enough time. That's according to authorities who have commented on the weaponry that 20-year-old Adam Lanza was using. And the bloodbath is so chilling that it's almost unspeakable to talk about what happened Friday in Newtown, Connecticut. But we'll give it our best shot with activist Faye Williams, a Democrat, former congressional candidate, and Scott Wilfong, noted Republican political consultant in this area. And Kevin, why don't we start with President Obama's response to the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut?
We've endured too many of these tragedies in the past few years. And each time I learn the news, I react not as a president, but as anybody else would, as a parent. And that was especially true today. I know there's not a parent in America who doesn't feel the same overwhelming grief that I do. The majority of those who died today were children. Beautiful little kids between the ages of 5 and 10 years old. They had their entire lives ahead of them. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, kids of their own. Among the fallen were also teachers, men and women who devoted their lives to helping our children fulfill their dreams. So our hearts are broken today for the parents and grandparents, sisters and brothers of these little children, and for the families of the adults who were lost.
297-5633 is your number if you'd like to join us, and also you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Faye Williams, what do you make of where we go from here?
Well, good morning, Jim. How are you? This, of course, is a very sad day, a very sad time for all of America and all of the world. But, you know, it takes me back to my life in Louisiana when I ran for Congress. I remember exactly where I was in 1986 when I had expressed some concern about assault weapons. And on the day that I was attacked by the National Rifle Association when I was leading in a campaign, because I questioned the need for assault weapons at that time, and, you know, by ordinary citizens. And I felt very alone that day. I was in Bunkie, Louisiana. I remember campaigning when the NRA decree came down, you know, to defeat me. And even the people who were supporting me at that time, other legislators and all, were very quiet. I felt very alone. And here we are all these years later, where some who perhaps at that time were against any kind of reasonable gun control are now saying we must do something. I still agree. I'll still be on the front line on that issue. And I know that people are talking about many things, needing to do something. Well, we've been talking about needing to do something for so many years on assault weapons, and we, some are saying we have to revive the assault weapons ban. We need mental health services. We need tough enforcement. Yeah, we need all of those things, but we don't need guns designed for combat in our everyday lives.
Scott Wilfong, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, which is the second largest gun rights group in America, is located at 11 Mile Hill Road in Newtown, Connecticut, across the highway from Sandy Hook Elementary School, a few miles down the road. At this point, these gun rights groups, like the NRA, they have not said a whole lot about what happened Friday, but is there any reasonable compromise on this, or is it a case in which both sides will continue to be on their respective sides and not give any ground?
Well, first of all, good morning. Thanks for having me on, Jim. You know, I don't know what you say to something that happened, like what happened on Friday. You know, I have a 6-year-old myself, and you know, it's hard to get through it. But you know, you have to step back and get away from the knee-jerk reactions, which are just, you know, predictable and the same every time. You know, you've got a state like Connecticut, which would certainly be in the top 10 in the country as far as gun control goes, and yet those laws didn't do any good. The laws that prohibited a man like this gentleman. This gentleman was not even old enough to buy a handgun on his own. But again, did this man care about laws? Of course he didn't. So, you know, we talk about assault rifles. You know, that's become an epithet that the media likes to use. You know, let's talk about what an AR-15 really is. It's a round of ammunition that is fractionally as powerful as what most deer hunters use. 7mm, 30-06, 30-30 rounds. Much more powerful. All we're talking about is a smaller round that the rifle itself has the capability of carrying more bullets. Well, an experienced deer hunter carries a pocket full of very powerful cartridges, which he could load in a moment's notice as well. So unless you want to talk about, you know, like the extreme people like Dianne Feinstein and all in California that want to go door to door and round up guns, you know, the whole argument about assault rifles is really a waste of time. We need to get on to solutions that actually have a chance.
Senator Feinstein has recommended that.
She did say in the 1990s that if she had her way, she would go door to door and say, turn them all in. That's her exact quote.
If we had our way, we might do a lot of things that we know we would not push if we were members of Congress. Charles in North Baton Rouge, we begin with you. Charles, you're on with Faye Williams and Scott Wilfong. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Faye and Scott. Let me say that I think it's very insensitive to say that there's a knee-jerk reaction to mass killings in America. What I would like to say as a former Marine, if we cannot protect children in kindergarten and first and second grade, the NRA should be ashamed to raise the American flag at their facilities. I think there are two issues that we have to address here. One is gun ownership is a responsibility, and it should not just be followed upon once. There was a mentally unstable young man in that home. There should have been, and there should be follow-ups with gun owners to make sure that these weapons are secure, to make sure that children are the mentally unstable, don't have access to them. There's no follow-up in America. And the other thing is, there needs to be a huge reassignment of resources to deal with the mentally unstable in America. They are the forgotten. They are the first ones to be cut in budgets. And these people are being hidden away. We had a murder in St. Francisville where a young man's life was taken by a teenager who wanted to kill for a thrill, who was mentally unstable, who should have been in an institution along with this young man. And it didn't happen. America should be ashamed of itself. We cannot protect our children. And the NRA should take the flag down. Don't lower it. Take the flag down if you think our reaction to this tragedy is knee-jerk.
All right, Scott.
Part of what this gentleman just said is exactly spot on. And I don't know that Americans have the stomach to return back to where we were 40 years ago, where people like this man were not allowed to be free. They were placed in asylums. They were placed in institutions. But, you know, everybody's got a crazy Uncle Joe that they see at Christmas and that they see at anniversaries. And Uncle Joe probably doesn't belong on the streets. But we've turned a corner in America where it's almost insensitive to talk about mental illness as if it's something that we should protect society from. But sadly, that is the case. Now, I'm not qualified to make the determination who is and who isn't, but I know there are mental health professionals that can look at these folks and say, you know, this gentleman should not be allowed in free society. And, you know, when people want to make a hard decision, that's the one Americans are going to have to make, not taking guns away from people.
Faye, would you respond?
Well, I think the caller was exactly right. I mean, there's so much to this. Obviously, gun enthusiasts are not totally to blame for this. There's so much more that society can do. As we're discussing the budget now, what are we talking about? Taking away money from health. That's one of the major things that's being discussed to take away. We need more money there because we do need more care for our mentally ill. And I think the brother who called in was exactly right in some of all the many things that we can do. I applaud him for saying it, and I wish I had known him when I was running for office and would have had support, you know, of people like him. There are people who are afraid to speak out on this. They're going to have to come out of this, whether they have an election coming up in 2014 or what have you. There are just some things on which you have to speak out. Dr. Martin Luther King talked about this in his speech years ago about the Vietnam War. But what did we do? Many people didn't speak out, and we found ourselves in more wars, more killing, more murders than we may have ever seen before, simply because people are afraid of their positions or afraid, to back down. But we have members of Congress right now, 30-some of them in the Senate, who haven't said a word about this because they're gun enthusiasts. Where are they? They're talking about everything else. They were there for voter suppression. They were there for all the other things that destroy our democracy. But where are they on this? These are little children who were innocent. When are we going to come to our senses and decide that at some time we got to put down that politics and we got to do what's right for our nation?
All right. Now, Nicholas Kristof in yesterday's New York Times, Faye and Scott, writes, we should impose a universal background check for gun buyers. Let's make serial numbers more difficult to erase and back California in its effort to require that the new handguns imprint a micro stamp on each shell so that it can be traced back to a particular gun. Do you think that's a step in the right direction, Scott?
I think, being able to trace a bullet that's already killed someone back to the rightful owner, especially in situations like this where the killer usually kills themselves, doesn't do much good. I think it's... when I watched the footage of everything that was going on Friday,
would you be supportive of that?
No, certainly not.
What would be the harm?
Well, the harm would be the additional cost. It would put businesses out, the manufacturers out of business trying to do this. But what I saw on Friday What I saw on Friday was police officers carrying the exact same rifle that this shooter walked into the school and did this horrible thing with. So there has to be an acknowledgement in society that guns do protect lives. Whenever a police officer rushes to a scene, they carry guns.
I don't think there's anybody saying that's not the case,
Scott. So a police officer who has a modicum of training, usually certainly more than the average citizen, but not a lifetime of training, is qualified to strap this gun on and go protect someone. But yet we're talking about taking it away from someone who is a law-abiding citizen.
Well, you have to register to drive a car. Why shouldn't you be registered to shoot a gun?
Well, we do have requirements, background checks. You have to go in and submit to a criminal background check if you want to purchase that gun. You want to walk out with it. I think that's a reasonable regulation on firearms. Not to get too far off topic, but we had a Dallas cowboy that had a drinking problem that got behind the wheel of a car and a man is dead. No one's talking about banning cars or reducing their speed. Maybe vehicles should only go 30 miles an hour so that no one gets hurt. It's these absurd suggestions. It's a crazy person that did this. It's a criminal who didn't care about the law. Why do we think making law-abiding citizens taking away their rights is somehow going to stop this? It's amazing to me.
30,000 people in this country die each year from shootings, not of this kind, and that's a big number. But Scott was talking about the good old days of 40 years ago. The number of homicides per capita 40 years ago was higher than it is today.
That's correct.
And 40 years ago, a little over 40, we had the deaths of Martin Luther King, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, Robert Francis Kennedy, the wounding of George Wallace, all of these with handguns. What have we learned in the last 40 years? Perhaps President Kennedy. I don't think that was a handgun. That was a rifle, obviously, but... we'll talk more about this topic and what happened in Connecticut after this 1 minute pause. This is Jim Eakster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Republican Scott Wilfong and Democrat Faye Williams, and we'll get them on some other topics, but I think we should spend a few more minutes on this topic, the death of 26 people last week in Newtown, Connecticut, at a school that was for young people. So the victims were between the ages of 5 and 10 at Sandy Hook Elementary School, 20 of them. And with brutal efficiency, the gunman, 20-year-old Adam Lanza, who killed his mother first and killed himself last, only wounded one person. He killed all the others. And we're having the discussion now about where we go from here. In his column in the New York Times yesterday, Nicholas Kristof writes that we're not going to eliminate gun deaths any more than we've eliminated auto accidents, but if we could reduce gun deaths by one-third, that would be 10,000 lives saved annually. And the discussion continues. We invite your participation. John on I-10. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I listen to your show every day. And I just had a comment about something that Scott, Mr. Wilcox, said at the beginning of the program, where he mentioned that if you want to talk about the difference between assault rifles and other guns, and he mentioned that deer hunters have guns with powerful ammunition, and that assault rifles simply have more rounds but are less powerful, and insinuated that somehow those are comparable. And I would just, I'd like to vehemently disagree. Obviously, this kid had an assault rifle. This young man has an assault rifle and with a lot of bullets able to take out. And we don't know the specifics, whether it's handgun or the assault rifle, where. But if he had guns that could only fire 8 rounds or 6 rounds or even 15 rounds, he would have had to stop and reload, and that would have been an opportunity to stop him. It could have been an opportunity for a security guard who could have carried a gun legally to stop him. And if I remember correct, I could be wrong about this, but I believe with the movie theater shooting, someone was able to stop him because he stopped the reload. Well, he stopped the reload after he got a lot of shots off.
All right, so what's your question? What's your question?
Well, I'm just wondering how he could, how one could make the argument, and what is his argument specifically, why it's okay to carry assault rifles?
You know, again, I just question, you know, what is an assault rifle? You know, if you get shot with a .22, I bet you've been assaulted. You feel assaulted. You know, it's this term that's meant to make something sound sinister, when in reality it's simply a tool like any other gun that's capable of holding more rounds. This gentleman, now not all the law enforcement reports are out yet, but by all accounts this gentleman had two other handguns on him that he never used. So even if he didn't have to reload, he could have simply dropped the rifle and started shooting with a handgun. And remember, what's so horrific about this is these are 5, 6, 7-year-old kids. They weren't fighting back. So to somehow think that, well, you know, if he'd have only had 8 rounds, he wouldn't have done so much damage. He had 4 guns. He left one of them in the car. You know, again, the solutions that the gun control people are offering are just non-starters. They don't accomplish a thing.
All right, Faye, please respond.
So what is happening, Jim, is that people are offering all kinds of ideas. And to take one off the table, I think, is irresponsible. We've certainly talked about mental health. We've talked about the movies. We've talked about all kinds of rudeness, mean-spiritedness, you know, the domestic violence. We've talked about everything. Why take any one thing off the table when 34 Americans are murdered with guns every day? We've got to leave no stone unturned. We've got to put everything on the table. And I think that's the point. And to have gun enthusiasts say, oh, well, take us out of the argument, is irresponsible.
I do agree with Faye on that. But what I also heard earlier from a caller was a demagoguing of the NRA. You know, we're going to call one organization who fights for freedom for its members, these horrible names and say that they're terrible. I agree. Let's put the ideas on the table, but let's look at the ones that actually have a chance of working, and denying law-abiding people their rights is not going to work.
Charlotte in New Iberia?
I have a couple of questions. One of them is directed toward the Republican, and it is, how can he say that it is too costly to identify the shells, as you asked him, Jim Acer, and not consider the cost of each of those people's lives? They would have generated much more income, and they would have impacted other people, inspired other people. And another question is concerning the limiting of the amount of shells. If, as the previous gentleman called, said, they would limit the amount of shells that a gun can be can throw out.
All right. limiting shells and also the you said it would be a cost to have background checks.
No, I said the micro stamping, which would be, you know, to put on every bullet. I mean, let's be honest. There are literally trillions of rounds of ammunition in this country. To be able to trace the individual piece of lead back to the
cartridge.
Couldn't
you pass that along to the consumer?
You know, if you look at the ballistics capabilities of state police and SWAT teams and everything, they know how to trace a bullet back.
Well, what about all these unsolved murders we have in this city right now?
I don't believe that simply having a number on the piece of lead that killed the person would do any good.
And the other one was about...
You've still got to have the gun to match it.
Limiting the shells.
Well, I think I addressed that earlier. Limiting the shells, you know, guns are able to be carried, you know, one man can carry a dozen guns on them. So if they can't fit as many bullets in one magazine, they'll just carry more guns like this insane person in Connecticut.
All right, John on Blue Bonnet, please be brief. John, you're on with Faye Williams, Dr. Faye Williams and Scott Wilfong.
How you good folks doing today? So many things to address. First off, we definitely need to focus on the mental health issue. Right now, your insurance will pay more for you to see a chiropractor each year than to receive mental health services.
All right, Faye, what about that observation?
Well, yeah, obviously that's the whole point of the new health law is so that we can take care of these things, because the system is failing a lot of people by not having access to health care. Did the system fail this young man's mother? Obviously. She was looking for a place to get him into where he could study, where he could get help. You know, there are just a lot of things that we need to do. That's why I said before, let's not take anything off the table, and I hope that almost immediately the president is going to set up a commission or whatever you call it to take some action, not just to study and study and study, but to recommend some action. You know, there's no amendment in our Constitution that's absolute. There can be reasonable restraint. And I admire Mayor Bloomberg in New York for talking about this issue. And since he's been working on it, murders have been reduced in New York City, our largest city here. So why can't we do the same all over this country?
Sherry writes about Scott's remark about everyone having a crazy Uncle Joe. She says, sadly, most of the tragedies are committed by teenagers and young adults, more like nephews than uncles.
Well, the age, she might be right about that, but I think you can look just at this year and see, you know, the movie theater shooting in Colorado, the one a couple of years ago where the congresswoman was shot, and then this individual last week. You know, the common denominator there was absolute insanity. You could see the look in their eyes that they were just not right. And you have to ask the question, how are folks like this, you know, one, how are they getting access to guns? Sadly, we know some of that, but why are they not being more closely looked at by healthcare professionals?
Canil on Old Hammond. Hi, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Mr. Angster. I've listened to you every morning. I just wanted to say thank you for taking my call. I had a comment that I wanted to place on the air, and anybody could, you know, reply to it. It's just, from my understanding, just kind of looking at society as a whole, like, it really wouldn't make, like, I hate to be insensitive about the whole situation, but it really wouldn't make a difference, it seems, as long as we as people still have to deal with, like, anger or anything. Like, mental illness doesn't necessarily play that much of a big part, because anytime in any situation a person can get angry and make a wrong judgment, and regardless if it's a knife, a gun, a rock, or a bare hand, somebody can kill someone else for any reason, you know? And that's kind of all I really wanted to say on that one.
He's right.
All right. Lois writes, no one wants to get rid of guns, just assault rifles and some of the opportunities for unstable people to commit mass murder.
You know, again, I guess it's what you define, you know, as assault rifles. But, you know, apparently the police felt it was necessary to come in with quite a few of those assault rifles to protect the citizens. You know, somehow I don't see the disconnect there between law enforcement using these weapons to protect people and denying the right of law-abiding people to have them as well.
Rancy in Millerville. Rancy, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Williams and Mr. Wilfong.
Yes. Hi, thank you. During Bill Clinton's administration, he had recommended that combination locks be put on personal firearms, and I was interested in getting the opinions of your guests on bringing that back, among other solutions. There is no one single solution, I understand.
All right. What about combination locks?
You know, again, to do anything that hinders the use of the tool, which is what a firearm is, you know, why again, I said it earlier, why don't we put governors on cars so we can't drive faster than 30 miles an hour? Because we don't really need to get anywhere that fast, do we? And if we reduce speed to 30 miles an hour, be a whole lot fewer traffic fatalities. I would advocate for that. I think that it's just as it's along the same lines of, you know, how much do we take away from law-abiding people in the name of safety.
Faye Williams.
Well, we do have controls or consequences on driving. That's why we have driving speed limits and what have you. I don't understand why Scott is so interested in taking away any opportunity. We're not saying all of these will work. We're saying they should all be on the table as we search for a remedy to reduce the number of violent deaths and these mass murders. No, we're never going to be able to stop people from using other weapons, but they would not be able to kill as many people as these assault rifles. And when he talks about law enforcement officials having higher powered guns, yeah, we all agree with that, I would think. But we're talking about anybody on the street, particularly mentally unstable people, having the same access as our military or as our law enforcement officials. That should be on the table. We're talking about ordinary people having access to these. It's wrong. We've got to do something about it.
Curtis on airline. Hi, Curtis. Please be brief. Curtis?
Oh, yes, Jim. Thank you. The comments that your guests are making right now are along the line of what I want to talk about. You mentioned earlier about a driver's license, and one of your guests didn't seem to think much of that. If I drive my regular automobile or light-duty truck, I need a certain class of license. But if I move up to a dump truck, I need a different level. If I'm carrying passengers or very large others, I need a CDL. So there are different levels of driver's licenses that you need in order to drive a vehicle. I think, and I'd be interested in your guest comments as to whether if that's just a regular handgun with a limited clip where you have one level where everybody has access to it. But when you start getting into assault weapons, this should be regulated to the extent that it's only for law enforcement people or military.
Well, I agree with the caller.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, we can step back from the debate of the issue and talk about just the reality, the political reality. The right to drive a car is not enshrined in the Constitution. The right to keep and bear arms is absolutely enshrined. So when you want to start taking away or limiting rights, you have a different process.
The right to bear all arms? Should we have a cannon in our front yard if we want one?
I read the Second Amendment. It says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
So if I want to put a cannon in my front yard, Scott says, go get them, Jim.
I think military-grade weapons have always been defined as a certain level of
Well,
armament.
That's what we're doing here, isn't it? We're defining what is appropriate and what is not in a civilized society.
It's really not, because I think in the 1700s, I don't have any doubt that the Revolutionary War was fought with the best weapons capable at the time. The militias that were formed did not use flintlocks from the 1600s with a lead ball.
Do you think you need a semi-automatic weapon to defend yourself?
I think the right of the people to have a semi-automatic weapon, yes, absolutely, yes. The average FBI crime statistics show that the average self-defense shooting involves 2.8 bad guys. Okay, that means almost three people are attacking one person. If you only have five rounds in the gun, it's going to be hard.
All right.
You better be a pretty good shot.
Okay. Chet Pilley writes, semi-automatic and automatic weapons are military grade. They typically hold dozens of rounds at once. A hunting rifle ain't that, he writes.
Hunting rifles can be reloaded just as fast as a Glock handgun or an AR-15. An experienced hunter knows how to stick the bullets in very, very fast.
Taylor on I-10. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, yes. I was wondering if we could kind of divert the argument to the media's involvement in this. I mean, you know, these killers, they see other killers before they kill, their faces plastered all over every television screen, and they say, hey, instead of me killing myself in my mother's basement and dying like a loser, I will be forever known in infamy. My name will live on. I think this is something that's playing a part in their the assault weapons and all that. Those are all valid arguments. But also, I think this should be discussed, the media's involvement in almost making these killers famous in their deeds.
Mm. That's scary. I've never thought of it, but I think he might be right that there's an idea of fame. You know, if you're going to die anyway, you know, die with fame. I don't understand that mindset, but you know, there has been glorification. I remember, was it Natural Born Killers that came out about 20 years ago? That Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis. That was the first movie I remember that glorified killers, and we've certainly gone down that road in entertainment since then.
I think we're scapegoating now. That's not what we should be doing. I think most liberals, most progressives have also talked about the role of the movie industry, of news. Jamie Foxx yesterday just came out talking about the movie industry having to take some responsibility. We're talking about putting everything on the table. And to you, Scott, let me just say, there is no amendment in our Constitution that's absolute. Supreme Courts have ruled over and over and over there can be reasonable restraint. If we go back to the original Constitution, I would still be in slavery. Our schools would still be separate, unequal. I mean, there would be so many things that are happening. But as time goes by, circumstances change, and reasonable people in this country see a need to make changes. With 34 Americans murdered every day, it's time for us to put everything on the table and deal with gun violence.
So when a certain group of people decide it's time to limit speech, I guess Mr. Inkster will be out of business, right?
There are controls on speech. Supreme courts have ruled that many times.
Chris in Prairieville, Paul in Opelousas. Please,
hey,
be brief, Paul.
Doing?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I think that the subject is out of the bag. Congress is going to discuss it. We're going to look at it. Public is going to be, you know, debating this and going to look at serious looks at that. What? Let's get back to reality. What do you think Congress can do, literally, to lessen the severity of these crimes?
All right, Faye, what can Congress do right now?
Well, Congress can certainly take a serious look immediately at Senator Feinstein's proposal that she has put out there. It's been out there before. It was canceled or went out in 2004. It's time for us to come back to dealing with what kind of restraints can we legally put on assault weapons for the ordinary citizen to have. That's one of the things. Included, other members of Congress can put in terms of looking at the movie industry, looking at the news media, what is it they do that maybe encourages unstable people to do these evil things.
We'll return with Scott Wilfong and Dr. E. Faye Williams after this one-minute pause on WRKF. 297-5633 is your number. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Funerals for the first victims of the tragedy Friday in Newtown, Connecticut, will be held today in the town that was best known as the home of the National Sports Shooting Foundation and now is known forevermore as a place where 20 young people between the ages of 5 and 10, elementary school kids, lost their lives, and 6 other people were killed as well in the carnage at 11 Mile Hill Road. Actually, that's the address of the National Sports Shooting Foundation in Newtown, Connecticut, not far from the school, Sandy Hook Elementary School. Please be brief as we round out our discussion with Scott and Faye Williams. Chris in Prairieville. Chris, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to make the comment that I just believe that in a free nation, where we have access to guns, things like this are going to happen, and they are going to be inevitable. And I'm not a fan of guns. I don't think – I think they do more harm than good. But, you know, this is the world we live in, and, you know, we are a violent nation. This violence is written into our Constitution, as giving us the right to have these things around us, and so this is, you know, this is where we're at.
All right, Josh in Livingston. Josh, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yes, I was wanted to make a comment that I think there shouldn't be regulation, but there should be more gun reform. You know, there should be some kind of test, some kind of limits to the amount of weapons that you can have, and maybe some kind of IQ test. You should be able to take that gun apart in front of whoever you are buying, know that weapon, know when it was manufactured. I mean, I think there should just be more, you know, policy to control the...
All right. Thank you, Josh, and thank you, Paul, or excuse me, thank you, Chris. Scott?
Yeah, I mean, just a quick comment. I heard a caller say that the guns do more harm than good. You know, I would just ask, you know, if we took guns away from police officers, do we think there'd be more police officer deaths in America if they didn't have them to protect themselves? So I think... You know, that again, we're losing the sight of the fact that guns do protect lives. And, in fact, we talked about the assault weapons ban.
I don't think anybody here today has made one statement about taking guns away from police officers.
No, I'm making the statement. He said guns do more harm than good. If that's the case, then police officers shouldn't have them either. But we do entrust responsible people with firearms to protect their lives and others. And I think from 1994 to 2004, when the assault weapons ban was in effect, the statistics bear out violent crime was higher, murder was higher, mass shootings were higher. As tragic as this is, the fact is that the instances of mass shootings are less than they were 25 years ago.
These kinds of mass shootings were not higher. The most prominent ones prior to the last few years was the 13 or 14 people getting killed in Texas on August 1st, 1966 by Charles Whitman. 32 people killed in Blacksburg, Virginia 5 years ago, 26 people last Friday in Connecticut. It is three other incidents this year? I think these mass shootings are actually going
The
up.
Statistics I've seen show that when you consider
what
more...
What would you find as a mass shooting?
Well, I think, when it's more than one person being shot, certainly, but... You know, did the assault weapons ban accomplish anything? The statistics don't show that it did. So.
All right. Faye Williams? Okay, let's see. Let's go to Sonny in Prairieville. Which line is he on, Kevin? No. Okay, Sonny, you're on with...
Here I am.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
You know, first and foremost, assault weapons were created by the military for the purpose of distinguishing human beings. Second off, I believe the Americans have the right to bear arms. The fact that this gentleman believes that we should be able to bear them in such a degree is really kind of ridiculous, because you don't need an assault weapon to defend yourself. A simple five-round handgun, or especially these autos they have today, this guy went into a school with a weapon that held 32 rounds in a magazine, okay? There's a big difference between having to reload something five or six times or having a weapon that you load once and can shoot as many times.
All right. Thank you, sir. Trey in Prairieville. Appreciate your comments, Sonny. Trey, you're on as well.
Good morning. I just wanted to really I agree with the call Taylor that said something about kind of keeping these guys anonymous and not sensationalize these guys. You know, their names are all over TV and pictures, and they're almost, as sick as it is, they're almost like heroes, you know, after this thing's done to certain other sick people.
All right. The media are assigned to cover stories, and it would be impossible to cover this one without noting the gunman. And if this guy is famous or infamous, it is coming after his death. Do you remember, Scott, the killers at Columbine in 1999? They were big news for a while. Do you remember their names?
Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris.
You're right. Yes. You got it. You got it. Faye Williams, do the media have some responsibility as far as these kinds of mass shootings as well? Okay. I think something's wrong with Faye's line. It's Kevin. Let's see if we can address that. Trudy in Goodwood. Trudy, you're on the air. Good morning to you. Kevin, I'm not getting any sound from the phone right now. All right. Is Faye back? Faye, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
There we go. What about the media having some complicity along these lines?
I think I said earlier, the media's got a role in all of this. I don't know that keeping the names silent would be helpful, but, I mean, obviously that should be on the table to examine, you know, what effect that has on people. I don't know that it would prevent anyone from, you know, doing the dastardly act, but certainly it should be on the table, too, to look at video games, to look at, you know, mental illness, to look at movies. If you remember, Tupac Shakur used to rap about Glock guns. Well, ultimately, he was killed by a Glock gun. You know, maybe had he understood the importance of this and he had not been glamorized in it, maybe it would have played some part in his life. I don't know that, but certainly everything should be on the table. Media's got to examine itself, too.
You know, I think that we ought to look at one group that was very successful in taking on a problem and getting the numbers down, and that's Mothers Against Drunk Driving. You know, drunk driving was a huge problem in this country, still is, but it was much worse 30, 40 years ago. Mothers Against Drunk Driving came in, and they worked through the criminal justice system to put people in jail who now, you know, it used to be a DWI was a ticket. They took you home, and you went and paid your fine. Today, it's a very serious offense, and I think those are the type of solutions we have to look at. Criminals who use guns, people that are not qualified to use them, we've got to start getting into the criminal justice system and addressing them at that point.
Quickly, a couple of other topics as we round out this discussion, and we, of course, will talk about the tragedy in Connecticut in the days to come, and it will be covered with Ernest today on WRKF by the staff at National Public Radio. What about Susan Rice withdrawing as a candidate for Secretary of State, Faye Williams? Were you disappointed?
Well, obviously I'm disappointed. As a matter of fact, the very day that she withdrew, several members of the women's groups, including NOW, Feminist Majority, National Congress of Black Women, Black Women's Roundtable, just so many, National Action Network, we were actually on Capitol Hill talking about her, talking with Senator Collins, Senator Graham, trying to talk with Senator McCain, who did not give us an appointment, but others. And I felt we were really making inroads because while some of these people were, you know, on a rally seemingly to destroy an innocent diplomat, Senator McCain, who's the leading face of it, and others are silent on the issue we've just been talking about at Sandy Hook. And they should be the leading the effort to end gun violence and to talk about fairness. If you look back to Friday, you'll see that law enforcement and others made lots of mistakes, you know, trying to get information out in an early assessment of what happened at Sandy Hook. People were under very difficult circumstances, and we understand that. They were doing the very best that they could. You know, initially it was said the woman was the mother of Lanza was a teacher at the school. They said there were two shooters. They said the father was killed. They said, you know, just all kinds of things. But again, it was their effort to get as much information out to us, and I think Senator McCain and others ought to look at what they've just done to try to destroy this diplomat who worked so hard for our country for so many years, a bright young woman, brilliant young woman, who's done so much for our country to attempt to destroy her career. I hope that President Obama will keep her on in her current position or find her another position where people like McCain, who is unfair, will, you know, think twice before they destroy someone's life or attempt to do it.
Susan Rice is a bald-faced liar. She took intelligence, disregarded it, went on television, and told the American people a lie 5 times. Anyone in that position that even continues to serve is a disgrace. And I am the one good thing she's done in her career is to withdraw her name as for consideration as Secretary of State.
Let's look at Senator McCain's record. Senator McCain graduated, what, 4 from the bottom and 800 and some people. He was a prisoner of war, yes, but what did he do? He told all of the secrets of the military. He knew that he was on an affirmative action status because his father and his grandfather were high admirals. He did some wrong things, too. Everybody does. But Susan Rice took the point she was given by the committee that Mr. McCain tends to admire so much, the intelligence community. Why weren't they questioned instead of Susan Rice? Susan used the information that was given to her by it. And I resent your calling her, you know, and you and people like you calling her a bald-faced lie. She's a diplomat. She served this country well, and she will continue to do it despite people like you who don't seem to understand the challenges that we Black women face in this country. You would never call a white male a bald-faced
liar. What does the fact that she's Black have to do with anything? She lied. She had access to classified information, and she lied.
One at a time, please.
She used information the intelligence community gave. No one questioned the intelligence community in terms of what they did. They just made an assumption that Susan Rice went out on her own when she was asked to go out under very difficult circumstances and try to give those talking points from the intelligence community.
Yeah, it makes it more difficult when you don't tell the truth. When it's a difficult situation, usually the first thing is that you tell the truth.
Tell me what she said that was a lie.
She had classified access to all the intelligence. We know from the first night, from within 20 minutes of the attack, we know what the intelligence community knew and that it was a coordinated terrorist attack. She disregarded that information, or she was told to disregard it, and she went on TV and lied to the American people. Now, there's you can sugarcoat it all you want, but that's the facts.
You don't know that she had classified information. If she did, she would not have been able to tell you.
Her clearance level was high enough to obtain that information. Yes, she did have access to
it. She could not tell it to you or the public. She said what she was told she could say.
She lied.
All right, hey, all of us do it at some time. But do you destroy a person's career who is doing what they feel at the moment is best to do?
Well, it's interesting you admit she lied. So, yes, I think she can go find service somewhere else.
No, I did not say that. Please don't put words in my mouth.
What about how the Bush administration reacted to 9/11? Were they forthcoming?
That was so long ago. I don't remember exactly how everything came out.
It hasn't been that long ago. We had people who went out. Another Rice went out and said some things that turned out to be false. We sent General Powell out there. Some things tended to be false. Did we destroy their careers? Did we attempt to? No, we did not.
I think General Powell...
Maybe it was a matter. Maybe I should have used Republicans versus Democrats and instead of saying that she's an African-American woman. I'm feeling it very... very much because there's so few African-American women who are given opportunities as Susan had, as bright as she is and as bright as many others are. Maybe that's why I take it personally. But there were others who certainly went out, and we know Cheney, all of them lied. You didn't mention them to get us into that war in Iraq, which has been so costly in lives and costly in terms of what is going on now. With
all right. Another topic. Thank you, Faye. She's wound up, and this is another sensitive one, and a surprising move by Governor Bobby Jindal, who last Friday in the Wall Street Journal penned an op-ed piece saying that he wants contraception to be made available over the counter. What do you think, Scott?
Whew. I love Bobby, but I don't know that he's a doctor. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. You know, I think the medical professionals are the ones that should answer that. I'm sure the governor has consulted with his healthcare people, but... You know, I think it's something we need to look at. Like Faye said earlier, we need to have all the ideas on the table. We just need to have the wisdom to decide which ideas really don't have merit and move on.
He says if women could buy birth control without a prescription, employers would not have to pay for it against their moral objections, and Democrats could no longer accuse Republicans of being anti-birth control.
I see where he's coming from. I don't disagree.
Are you ready to embrace that one?
I think it would be. I think it's something that could be implemented. Yes. I mean, we didn't allow. You know, I mean, I take Claritin almost every day, and 10 years ago, that was prescription only. So, you know, moral objections aside, if you object to it morally, you don't have to take it.
Dr. Williams, Governor Jindal writes, as a conservative Republican, I believe that we've been stupid to let the Democrats demagogue the contraceptives issue and pretend during debates about health care insurance that Republicans are somehow against birth control. It's a disingenuous political argument they make. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's about... Jindal says something that makes sense, but I still think that people who cannot afford contraception would not be able to have it without health insurance. So he's not totally... you know, above water on this one. I think it's just that maybe he is one of the Republicans who's learning that, you know, they have no business in a woman's body determining what she does and what she needs. But I'm glad to hear him at least, you know, coming part of the way to making sense that it's about time women are free to have contraception, because as we know, there are some governors who think it shouldn't be available under any circumstances.
Now,
governors and also presidential candidates. I'm remembering Rick Santorum on that one.
Mm-hmm. Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood's Action Fund, says, we completely agree that access to birth control should not be a political issue. Who would have thought, Scott, that Bobby Jindal and Planned Parenthood would get together?
Wonders never cease.
Well,
it just shows when you put everything on the table, sometimes Republicans make sense.
And politics do make strange bedfellows. Okay, she says, we welcome Governor Jindal's thoughts and contributions to the conversation on women's health. Governor Jindal, is he a newborn liberal, Scott?
No, but I think he is clearly positioning himself for 2016.
You think this is all about 2016?
I do.
I think that's something we can all agree on.
Absolutely.
Faye, do you think our governor will be president someday?
Absolutely not. I mean, that's my best wish that he would not, because even though he's trying to make sense on the issue of contraception, he's certainly not making much sense on any other issues. So I would think he'd have such a long, long way to go.
All right, we got to roll, but thank you, Dr. Faye Williams and Scott Wilfong, and CC Adcock will be with us tomorrow. So thanks for CC for being patient, and for you for participating and listening, and we hope you'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For Kevin, I'm Jim. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.